Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, with occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Republican Chris Roebling, Democrat Jim Wall, and author Carol Felsenthal. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at the Sirius XM Studios on Chicago's Great West Side, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, our email address is btb@museum.tv. btb@museum.tv. We're going to be with you for the full 2 hours this evening on radio, next hour on television if you're watching in the Chicagoland area. And again, we're going to be talking primarily about foreign policy, about Barack Obama's trip to Latin America. And once again, the president on foreign soil has said some things that has raised the hackles of some conservatives. We're also going to be talking this evening about the interrogation memo that was released by the White House, whether that was a wise idea or not. Some of the things we'll be talking about this evening. But let's go back to what the president had to say while he was touring Latin America. He obviously had policy changes this week involving Cuba, and also had a photo taken with Hugo Chavez, which has created some concern in some circles. But this is what the president had to say again when he was in Trinidad. He said, quote, "If we are practicing what we preach, and if we occasionally confess to having strayed from our values and our ideals, that strengthens our hand. That allows us to speak with greater moral force and clarity around those issues. We're not simply going to lecture you, but we're rather going to show, through how we operate, the benefits of these values and ideals." End of quote. Chris Roebling is our Republican this evening. Chris, when a president says that on foreign soil, first of all, do you agree with it? Do you find anything offensive about offering, acknowledging that we're confessing to past indiscretions that we may have been involved in? Good idea, bad idea? Does it have any impact at all?
Well, I think the statement is a lot less offensive than some of the ones he made on his European trip, and it's a lot less offensive than him crossing the ballroom to go shake hands like a giggling sophomore when in a starstruck manner he was meeting Hugo Chavez. So this statement is one that may work, may not work. He is going to be judged by his results. And if he is choosing to make this statement now, fair enough, it may soften some of the hard feelings. It may not. He is going to have to be judged by the American people and by, I think, the people of the region, of the hemisphere, on whether or not he increases democracy, increases trade, increases production and incomes. And right now, I think he's aligned with a lot of forces in the region that are not oriented in that direction.
Jim Wall, you're our Democrat this evening. During the campaign, the primary campaign, candidate Barack Obama said that he was going to have discussions with people that the United States normally hadn't spoken with. So he's done that, certainly with Hugo Chavez. And his offering and using the word confess, having occasionally confessed to straying. Are you happy that he said that? And is there any downside to acknowledging that?
Except for the kind of reaction that it brings from Chris and his other Republican friends around the country, especially in the Senate, who want to beat up on him no matter what he says. No, I think it's a great statement. I kept hearing you read it, and I'd seen it in the paper, and I said, now that statement is something that I might have written for him, but did not, of course. But it's just a great moral principle statement that he is making.
Carol Felsenthal joins us tonight. Carol, nice to have you with us. Is this an idealistic president speaking in idealistic tones to a world, at least a portion of the world may like this stuff, but the real bullies of the world are laughing at this statement?
I think that certainly after the G20 conference, and he certainly raised some hackles there because you saw Sarkozy being critical of him almost in an envious and adolescent manner because Barack Obama has stolen a lot of the glamour and the thunder from Sarkozy, who had plenty of it before, and of course Michel did the same to Sarkozy's wife. I think that these statements were very well planned. He had to know that Chavez was going to do something weird, and he had to be prepared for it. I thought one of the most entertaining parts of it was the gift, because there's been so much controversy over the what have been called tacky gifts that the Obamas gave to the Queen, there's more details, and I won't go into all of those. But the gift that Chavez gave to Obama, this 1971 book about Latin America and about the United States role, all negative. Obama accepted it. The book is harshly critical and, of course, out of date by now. It moved up to number one on Amazon as soon as the title was leaked. I was thinking, gee, what could I do to get him to mention one of my books? But I think what Obama said is what I would have expected him to say. I think the really, really interesting part of this is Cuba. And what is...
We're going to talk about that a little bit later on, but I want to just get to the whole issue. I want to come back to you, Chris. Is there a downside? Is there any downside to this?
Sure.
Because
I
would say, tell me what the downside is, because as the president said himself, he said this is what he said he was going to do during the primary campaign.
Right.
The Democratic primary voters voted for it. The American people voted for it.
Right.
So we shouldn't be surprised at what he's doing. So the American people are cheering him on when he does these things.
Well, we'll see. He's doing fine in the polls right now. I don't think that people are trying to fight with him over everything. I think people are trying to find areas where they can agree with him. Unfortunately, when he goes overseas, it's getting to be pretty tough to find areas where you can agree. No, the problem that you have with statements like this, and my friend Jim Wall's use of morality as a category in this conversation, leads to a much bigger conversation about the actions of states versus the actions of individuals, and Reinhold Niebuhr, and a lot of thinking that goes into questions like that, which we can't get into. But my point is that states behave in their interests, and states at the same time, especially the United States, has tried to find it in its interest to be benevolent to others. Sometimes we've met that mark, sometimes we haven't. Our critics and our adversaries, certainly the people that were providing source material for this 1971 critique of U.S. foreign policy in Latin America, are people who will take any official acknowledgement of the shortcomings of American actions versus American values and use it to exacerbate tensions for their benefit, either in the United States or with their domestic constituency, wherever they come from. So, yes, there are questions, there are problems that can come from statements like this.
I want to get your response to that, but we do have to pause. 1-800-723-8289. Last week in the meeting between President Obama and Hugo Chavez, was there a big winner on the world stage, even on the regional stage? Is Chavez viewed, and when he goes back to Venezuela, is he viewed as a big, big winner last week, more so on the world stage than Barack Obama? I want to get your reaction to that.
So, April, you know your charger's still using energy when it's plugged into the wall, right?
Yeah, but that's not my charger. I don't even have a cell phone.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. We'll get to calls in just a moment. But one of the other big stories last week, talking about confessing your past misdeeds, was the decision by the White House to release many of the documents that described interrogation techniques used by the Bush administration. Much of this information had been made public in the past, some of it by news accounts, some of it by the Bush administration. And certainly the President Obama on his first day in office said that the actions and the conduct of the interrogators would not be tolerated, and there was a new policy. So these past indiscretions and, in some views, brutal treatment and interrogative atrocities would never, ever happen again. So some people were surprised when the White House last week released these documents, four significant memos putting or describing in detail how detainees were treated. And in the report, this is what the president and the White House had to say. Quote, "I believe that exceptional circumstances surround these memos and require their release." I want to talk more about what was in the memos, but I want to get your reaction, Jim. What was so exceptional about these circumstances, taking into consideration that much of the news had already been out there?
What
made it so exceptional that it had to be released?
What was exceptional was that it officially recognized that we knew and officially acknowledged that these things had been approved by government officials and were carried out by lower-level personnel.
And who benefits from that revelation?
It's known as transparency. He promised transparency. He is saying to the world, that part of our history is gone. We are not going to do that anymore. And it's the most ridiculous criticism I've heard was from the Republicans and other critics who said, well, he shouldn't have let people know through the memos how we do these things. Why not? Because he's not going to do them again. So why does it make any difference as to whether or not the bad people, the one who want to do bad to us, know that we're not going to do them
anymore? Chris Roebling, your response just to that part of the statement. Anything exceptional about it that requires their release?
The exceptional element of this tableau is the extreme left wing of the Democratic Party and its support for Barack Obama as the anti-war candidate throughout the 2008 presidential election. There is no basis on which the memos should have been released. It's harmful to U.S. security. The greater includes the lesser. If a president can command troops in war and they can take a life, they can certainly torture. And I think any American who reads these memos is going to be very proud of the extent to which the Bush administration very seriously considered what they were talking about and very strictly limited. And finally, on the point of transparency, this is selective transparency, because even Barack Obama, as ill-equipped and ill-prepared for the presidency as he is not going to be completely transparent about the activities of the CIA, NSA.
I want to let Carol Felsenthal weigh in on this. Carol.
One of the interesting reactions, I think, was a number of former CIA directors who expressed displeasure with the release of these memos, and they were across. I know George Tenet was one. Hayden was one. He came out with a strong statement, I believe, today. But it did go across administrations.
Even Leon Panetta.
Leon Panetta was opposed to it.
So you had both Clinton and Obama, CIA directors.
Right, Panetta. Was vociferously opposed to it. There was an argument I've heard between the two of them that became quite animated and loud, and he overruled Panetta. It's interesting because at the same time,
what about the political stuff? Do you think is it a political move on his part?
I was surprised at. I'm opposed to torture, appalled by it. I don't have the background to really be a critic who knows what I'm talking about in any deep sort of way. Yeah. But reading it, and I did read it, I think a lot of people had a very big curiosity about it. I was surprised at the tour that it was as restrained as it was.
Exactly.
Although there was one, when you read about the prisoner in a box with a bug, I thought, that doesn't sound so bad to me, but apparently they knew that this man was had a phobia about bugs.
Jim, you had a follow-up.
My mind is getting a hard time getting around this business of defending torture, which is what you're doing. Morally, as our values do not permit torture, so that ends the conversation. He's saying that. Obama is saying that. We will not torture.
Yeah, he has said that for his administration. Another reason why he shouldn't have done what he did is it completely clouds the decision-making and really the very honest, true-hearted desire of the middle-level CIA operatives or Navy SEALs or whoever might be called upon in situations like this, because they don't know what the next administration's
going to say. Let's go back to what the report said, and let's look at the next paragraph of the report. In releasing these memos, it is our intention to assure those who carried out their duties, relying in good faith upon legal advice from the Department of Justice, that they will not be subject to prosecution. And then he goes on to say, Jim, in the next paragraph, this is a time for reflection, not retribution. I respect the strong views and emotions that these issues evoke. We have been through a dark and painful chapter in our history. But at a time of great challenges and disturbing disunity, nothing will be gained by spending our time and energy laying blame for the past. Then, he goes on to say, the United States is a nation of laws. My administration will always act in accordance with those laws and with an unshakable commitment to our ideals. That is why we have released these memos, and that is why we have taken steps to ensure that the actions described within them never take place again. He's already said that's going to happen. Now, here's my point to you.
All right. I'd like to hear it.
If you despise torture.
Yeah. It's illegal.
Okay. You despise it, I assume, because not just because it's illegal, it's immoral in
both.
Your view. Okay. So he's already said that we're not going to do that again.
Yeah.
We've now confirmed to the world what we have done.
Right.
We know who the people are who created the policy. We know the people who implemented the policy. He's now saying to the people that implemented the policy, that's okay, we're not going to go after you.
Mm-hmm.
Then he's in the next breath, he says, well, you know, we're not going to look into this. We're not going to do it again. So my question to you, and then on top of everything, we're a nation of laws. I'm confused by this. Is he trying to have it both ways?
No. Now,
realistically.
He is saying, correctly, I believe, that those who carried these acts out did it under instructions of their superiors who told them that these were legal actions. They did it because they were told to do so under legal guidance. Now, that's why he's not going to prosecute them, but he does not expect it to happen again.
You know why he's not going to prosecute them,
in my view?
He's not going to prosecute them because he knows that would be political suicide to do it. And here's why. Because notwithstanding these indiscretions, illegalities, immorality, as you have defined it, and there's a lot of people, most of them liberals, who agree with what your same interpretation. A fact is the American people have been safe. There has not been another terrorist attack since September 11th.
And you are
claiming? A lot of average people say, you know what?
I don't really want to know
how I've been protected. All I want to know is I have been protected.
You have a
low. Torture. You are absolutely right. And I can see the point. Torture itself is illegal.
Yeah.
These were called enhanced interrogation for a reason.
Torture.
And that was you're conflating the two. I think there is a difference.
The same.
And I think there will be another election and there may well be another result. But my point is that when he releases this, he is only taking a step towards greater discussion because of Congress and because of the ACLU and because of MoveOn.org. All of those organs of left opinion are going to be moving in now to start hearings and things like that. So he has declaimed prosecution, and Rahm Emanuel declaimed prosecution for the people who wrote the memos. So that pretty much is out. We're not going to be prosecuted. But they will be pilloried.
But there's a Spanish court
that is talking about prosecuting the higher ups.
That's happening. Also, the waterboarding, which was equated with torture by many people during the campaign and after, there was one prisoner who was waterboarded like 100 and some times. It was scores of times.
Sure, right, sure.
That seems like torture to me, unless he just became so inured to it that he wasn't impacted.
Basically,
by it.
Every Navy SEAL And most of the special ops people for the Army and the Air Force and the Marines have gone through waterboarding.
And they're our heroes now because they say
we were not torturing them when we trained them that way.
Don't try and run with that particular argument because these Navy SEALs know that this is going to be over. So that's a bad argument to put into this discussion, a very bad argument.
But the reason that the person being interrogated knows it's going to be ending is because the person being interrogated is the repository of information that is desired by the interrogator.
Nobody has said yet, and I must say it myself, that it does not work.
It has worked.
No, it
that is factually wrong, Jim. You are factually wrong.
It does not work.
In that case, it's you versus
the former head of the CIA.
Exactly.
We're going to come back. We're going to continue this discussion. 1-800-723-8289. The question: airing the country's dirty laundry. Is there a positive side to this? Is there a positive side to doing it? From Fresno, California to Fayetteville, North Carolina, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thank you very much for joining us. We're going to take calls in just a moment. Our Democrat tonight is Jim Wall, Reverend Jim Wall, who is one of the contributing editors of the Christian Century magazine for many years. That's one of the leading Protestant publications with a progressive perspective.
Correct.
You are from Monroe, Georgia. You, for many years, you were a sports writer for the Atlanta Constitution and a longtime friend of Ernie Harwell.
Yes.
Voice of the Detroit Tigers. Also joining us this evening is Chris Roebling, once upon a time the executive director of the Cook County Republican Party. He is also a principal in J&M Thompson & Associates. He is a public relations advisor, consultant, with occasional interest in politics, but you don't do it officially, but
correct.
You've been an advisor to political candidates,
right,
including a gentleman that wanted to be Don Hyder, who wanted to be mayor of Chicago.
That's
you were a campaign manager.
One of many,
for
yes.
the last
Don was
real
great.
Serious
That's
campaign
right.
by a Republican to be mayor of the city of Chicago.
We tried.
Also joining us is Carol Felsenthal. She is one of the country's leading writers. Her latest book is called Clinton in Exile. And she also has written numerous articles for Chicago Magazine, including cover stories on Rod Blagojevich before he was a household name.
Well, and he was governor. It was
governor,
before he got in trouble, when he still looked like
fall,
the golden boy.
The fall, before he was tarnished.
Right.
And you also did, how many books have you written over the years?
I think seven.
Seven.
And one of them is being made into an HBO movie about Katharine Graham, mm-hmm. the publisher of The Washington Post. And I did a cover story of Michelle Obama that came out mm-hmm. last February. Epi Letterer, who is mm-hmm. also known as Ann Landers.
And many years ago, you wrote one of the first landmark books on the issue of teenage suicide.
Right.
Many years ago.
That was all out of the field I'm in now, though.
Right. By the way, before we take calls, and we have a lot of callers, I do want to take just a moment to acknowledge something that took place last Friday night at our public television station in Chicago, WTTW. I think we can talk about WTTW and WYCC TV 20 because it is one of the legendary public television stations in the country. But last Friday night, they celebrated the 25th anniversary of the Chicago Tonight Show with Phil Ponce and John Calloway and Bob Surratt. The actual 25th anniversary is coming up this Friday. I was pleased to be the producer of that program, and they brought several hundred people together at the Harris Theater last Friday night to celebrate, really, a remarkable television show, not just in the history of Chicago. There is no program like it anywhere in the United States, and for a public television station and for a visionary leader like Bill McCarter, to do what he did 25 years ago— and basically turned over airtime so there can be a serious discussion of the issues facing the city of Chicago each and every night, uninterrupted. The program was ultimately expanded to 1 hour. Again, it's gone through three hosts, starting with John Calloway. And again, it gave me a start on television in Chicago, which I will never forget. But again, a quality show, and so my hats are off to a project that I was involved in the early stages of. But again, it lives on, and again, in the annals of American local television, it really is a giant. And for those of you who are regular viewers to that program, it's a real treasure. I'm sure that you appreciate it as much as those that have participated in producing it for over 25 years. Let's go back to calls or go to calls. Let's go to Al listening to us in Chicago on WLS on line 7. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. Really what I wanted to say was it's my belief and my hope that Barack Obama is a one-term president. My question is, and my basic premise is that what's going to happen with the next president? I mean, now we have, let's say we have a terrorist attack or something happens and Obama is voted out of office. Now we have a new president come in and we have to, you know, we have to retrain the CIA to do different techniques because Al-Qaeda knows our techniques. I think this just shows you how irresponsible and how naive Barack Obama is. You know,
but wait a minute. Let me ask you this question, Al. You put the blame on Barack Obama. Barack mm-hmm. Obama went through a presidential campaign. He went through a primary. He went through the general election. The American people, they voted for Barack Obama. Barack Obama has not done anything since he's been president that should be a surprise to anyone. He basically has done what he said he was going to do.
Well, I disagree.
I think
Barack Obama, some of us last year, and Jim was appalled at me then, as he is tonight, but some of us last year were saying, look, Barack's a fraud. He's a lightweight. He's a left-winger. He's acting nice and moderate now. You just wait until he gets in. He'll expand government. He'll grow government spending like you've never seen. And all of these little tracers that are on there with Bill Ayers and whatnot, it's going to be the most left-wing government we have ever had. We were right. We were right. That is what has happened. Barack Obama is not the moderate he campaigned as. He has blown out all fiscal discipline. He has beggared the nation for decades to come with respect to the interest we're going to have to pay on this massive debt for this crazy, porculous building bill that he put through. And, you know, so I think he has actually governed much farther to the left than he told people he would.
Jim Walton.
You seem to have overlooked what happened before he got into office. Somebody named Bush sent this country into the depths of depression through their stupid and ill-advised behavior. And yet you overlook that, and in the space of 3 months, you think the perdition is going to arrive at us. I don't understand the kind of thinking I hear coming from this point
Carol.
Of view.
You're talking about the Iraq War in particular when you
I'm
say
talking
that?
About the absence of deregulation. I mean, the way he dealt with regulation. I'm talking about the total expenditure, the failure to.
But can you, Jim, can you speak to Al's comment? One of the points that Al had to say was that by this revelation, he hopes that he's a one-term president. Yeah. The voters are going to decide that. But are you, as a Democrat, put your partisan Democrat hat on now. Take your liberal moral hat off.
All right.
And pure politics now.
One can't do that.
Well,
but
you
ahead.
Can.
I understand.
You can. You can, and I know you've done it before, and you can do it. Okay. You're a good politician. Here's my question: is there a little bit about this releasing of these interrogation memos? Is there a little piece of that that scares you, because if there is another terrorist attack, the Democratic Party and Barack Obama may be perceived as weak. Mm. And if that weakness is perceived by the American people, they are never going to forgive the Democratic Party. Any even an inkling of possibility to that?
Did 9/11 get prevented by torture? No. On whose watch did 9/11 come to us? It came under George Bush. I think the connection of torture to our security is irrelevant because that's not what protects us.
If there is a perceived belief, a perception...
Now, you're talking perception entirely here.
Perception in politics is reality, is it not, Jim? Perception is reality. I believe there is a perception on the part of many people that, you know, whatever interrogation techniques were used, you know what? I don't really want to know about it. All I know one thing is there has not been another terrorist attack since 9/11.
Okay.
So the Bush administration and all of their attorney generals, they must have done something right because there has not been another attack. Now, my question now is, Now it's time. There's a new president. The American people voted for him. Now we're going to take the indiscretions, the illegalities, the violations of civil liberties, however you want to define it. We'll define it in whatever how you want to define it. We're going to spread that information out. We're going to share it with the whole world. We're going to say we shouldn't have done this. We're going to never do it again, ever do it again. And my question to you politically is, if there's another terrorist attack, are you telling me that some people are not going to take it out on the Democratic Party?
A few, 25-30% will, and Chris and his colleagues will.
It's a big percentage.
But torture does not prevent 9/11 coming to us. That's the point I was trying to make.
But that is an opinion. It's not based on it.
Torture before 9/11, and we got 9/11. I don't see that.
I don't think the Clinton administration was doing had an advanced.
Were they doing torture
interrogation?
No, I don't think the Clinton.
It was a law enforcement approach to the terrorist problem,
which is what torture does.
The Clinton administration had taken its eye off of foreign affairs
until
Monica Lewinsky happened. Then he wanted the nation's eye off his domestic affairs, so he went back to foreign affairs. But it wasn't a serious time.
Your point is we didn't torture.
That was your point. We did not torture before the Bush administration.
I'm assuming the Bush administration had all that time to identify these. Of course they tortured.
But my point is, I don't think you can. I know the Democrats and liberals love to blame everything on George Bush. But let us, if we're going to turn back the clock and we're going to talk about every past indiscretion of every administration, which is what the news media tends to want to do. And by the way, I generally support it. I'm not saying this is a bad thing. This is a discussion of whether it's good for the country or not.
This is the Pentagon Papers.
This is Operation Mongoose.
Right.
This is trying to assassinate Fidel Castro. That was John Kennedy and Robert Kennedy.
Right,
they were trying to assassinate. They were in bed with the mob trying to do it, Jim. This was a Democratic administration.
And you're not going to go back and look at all those past behaviors?
That past behavior has been looked at.
Yeah, only by a congressional investigation.
But if we're going to talk about the past transgressions,
yeah,
I think you have to say, after 9/11, as long as Bush was in office, there wasn't another attack on the homeland.
10 seconds.
And we can give him credit for that totally?
All right, we've got to pause.
No.
That's the question. 1-800-723-8289. Back shortly. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Lots of callers on the line. Let's head to Briggs, Idaho, where Tom is listening to us on POTUS. Go ahead, XM. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello.
Tom, go ahead.
All right. So we're talking about should the secrets be released. I think one very important point is that fear breeds contempt. And if we're terrorizing good people or bad people, we're obviously going to create contempt worldwide. Kind of like the big bully on the schoolyard, and we're isolating ourselves from the rest of the world. I think that Obama is obviously attempting to restore some of the destroyed trust that the Bush administration has created.
Carol,
excellent.
One of the interesting events at this trip that Obama is just finishing up now was Daniel Ortega. Pretty much lambasting
President
of Nicaragua, back for a second act, and he was lambasting the U.S. in a speech and talking, describing the U.S. as exactly that, the schoolyard bully, and enumerating instances when the CIA was involved with, allegedly, with assassinations of leadership in Central and South America. And Barack was asked about that, and he said, well, he talked for 50 minutes,
right,
and the implication was that he was, just was going on and fulminating, and nobody should really take it seriously.
He also said, don't blame me for things that happened when I was 3 years old.
Right. Yeah. Points that I hope is not lost in the questions about Ortega, or we now have the FMLN elected in El Salvador, or we've got Hugo Chavez and the president meeting each other. There is surging turmoil south of our border. from Mexico all the way down to perhaps even as far as Chile, there are some very destabilizing activities going on. Some of them are political, Hugo Chavez, courtesy of Hugo Chavez. A lot of them are narco-terrorist. We heard talk this week by Congressman Mark Kirk of Illinois, who was very specific about the capabilities of the Zeta gang, which has been hired pretty much as a private military for competing faction in the drug trade coming out of Mexico. And we are facing the United States for the first time really in memory is facing a decaying southern flank. Now, this is this is not partisan. This is just descriptive. And we have got to President Obama, Secretary Clinton, all organs of U.S. involvement have got to fully appreciate this situation because we don't want a failed state on our southern border.
I want to talk more about that in the second hour, but I want to speak to Tom's point. Tom, your basic point was it's okay if the president acknowledges some of these. It's fresh conversation. Let's go to another Tom listening to us in Woodridge, Illinois on WLS. Go ahead, Tom.
Yes, Bruce, excellent program as usual.
Thank you.
Mr. Roebling's point that he tried to make, I think, is specious. I returned about 2 months ago from a trip to the United Kingdom, and I was in London. And those detainees that were British citizens that were released by the Bush administration have been telling their stories up and down Europe. And it's common knowledge that the 25 detainees, not only in Guantanamo, but also in Afghanistan, died under interrogation. If that's not torture, I don't know what is. And obviously, President Obama is simply affirming what everybody in Europe already knows, that the United States resorted to coercive and physically damaging interrogation techniques to get what they wanted. And this Abu Zubaydah, apparently, was waterboarded 183 times. If they were getting any valuable information from this man, why was it necessary to go through the waterboarding 183 times?
Exactly.
It makes no sense. Thank you.
All right. Let's talk about Europe. Let's talk about France taking maybe one of the Guantanamo detainees. Let's talk about Europe stiffing Barack Obama when it comes to supporting the NATO mission in Afghanistan. Let's talk about Europe telling the socialists in Europe telling Barack Obama, you're overspending and you're not going to solve our problems economically by overspending. We need a different orientation, Barack Obama. You're going in the wrong direction. The reality is that Barack Obama can go to Latin America and apologize for the United States. He can go to Europe and apologize. He could go to Asia Minor and apologize. He'll go anywhere and apologize. Whatever. He's the president. He can do what he wants. It's a question of what's going to work. And he, you know, the discredited description of George Bush pursuing unilateral diplomacy against North Korea when everything was put into the six-party talks, Barack Obama says, I want unilateral diplomacy with North Korea. Now we cannot get from the United Nations a resolution, not even a paper worthless resolution. We're reduced to a letter from the United Nations.
Let me ask you a question, all right? We have the former CIA director, General Hayden. We have him reporting to the American people on television and to congressional committees that these interrogation techniques worked. They resulted in significant information that thwarted terrorist attacks against the United States. Now, are we to believe him or are we to believe you and Jim Wall? Who are we to believe? Tom?
Oh, Bruce? Well, obviously, Mr. Hayden has got a good deal to conceal from the American people.
There's no question about that. No question about it. I will acknowledge that a CIA director really, in his heart of hearts, wouldn't want anything released. But again, if I'm trying to be objective, who am I supposed to believe? Am I supposed to believe the former head of the CIA, or am I supposed to believe the contributing editor of Christian Century magazine when he states emphatically that these interrogation techniques didn't work? Jim, how do you know they didn't work?
Let me tell you something before Tom answers. That is to say that this man you've been citing, Hayden, came out of the administration that believed there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq.
About,
you remember
what
that?
About Panetta,
and you remember saying, you remember
what about
saying,
Panetta? Some reason why Panetta?
You're citing Hayden now. Let's talk about Hayden.
Yeah, go ahead.
Panetta was. Remember, Panetta was Bill Clinton's chief of staff.
He was a political guy,
and he was a congressman. And many people thought when he was nominated to be the head of the CIA that he didn't have the background qualifications to be it. But he was confirmed. He's there. And suddenly his thinking changed
in a way that's part of the team now.
How about they have access to the secrets? We've got to be back. 1-800-723-8210. We've got another full hour for listening to us on radio. If you're watching us on television, we'll see you next week. Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, with occasional injections of room and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Republican Chris Roebling, Democrat Jim Wall, and author Carol Felsenthal. Our program tonight coming from our home base at the SiriusXM studios on Chicago's West Side, where our phone lines are open toll-free at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, our email address, btb@museum.tv. Well, on his recent trip to Latin America, actually right before his recent trip to Latin America, President Obama said that he was going to ease some of the economic tensions between the United States and Cuba, basically easing tensions insofar as the travel between the countries and the amount of money that can be sent by American Cuban Americans back to the homeland. And this was an attempt to thaw some of the frosty relations. Some critics have suggested that it's time long past due that the United States forget this sanctions of Cuba, which are coming up on their five decades almost. He hasn't gone that far, but he wants to at least extend an olive branch, as he has done with Hugo Chavez in Venezuela. And Jim Wall, as you look at this, you have traveled to Cuba about five times in your adult life.
Yes.
You support this idea. Why?
It's a great idea because, first of all, the embargo has not worked. It has not been working for decades. I know in 1980 when I went down to Cuba with a delegation and came back, we spoke to some members of the Carter administration, and had Carter been reelected, they were prepared to open negotiations with Cuba to move toward eliminating the embargo. But comes Reagan for 8 years, and the strength of the lobby in Florida, which built up more and more, and we can thank, since 1980, with all the Republicans, and Clinton didn't do anything to change it, and the lobby in Miami and around Florida, we have simply maintained a totally ridiculous embargo, which needs to end now.
Chris Roebling, your response to not only that statement, but also what the president has talked about, and that at least is a thawing of the relations.
I've only been to Cuba once in 1999, and I think that this is a very targeted step by Obama. And I think that's what commends it. I think that Jim is right. I think most everybody acknowledges that the I think President Reagan, from what he publicly said about it, and people on our side of the fence look at it from the standpoint of the plight of the average Cuban and the communist domination of the allocation of jobs and housing and healthcare and everything else. And if you're not on good terms with your local Communist Party organization, you're out of luck for a lot of up to food, you know, people starving down there. But the embargo has not brought down the regime.
Yes.
This is targeted because if you take remittances back to families, you're putting money into the hands of people. When the Dutch would come in or the French would come in with some kind of economic development, they would buy workers from the regime. And that money did not really get to the workers. It got to the regime. So
Carol
this is
Felsenthal,
a much better way of going.
Is it time to go further and get rid of the embargo?
Well, he's
and you agree that it hasn't worked?
He is leaving the embargo in place.
Yes.
No,
the
but,
embargo,
I'm, but yeah. I'm asking you. I'm moving the discussion forward
well,
because
I
try
mean,
to move it forward.
Yeah, I have so. I have to admit that I have never been to Cuba. I wrote a book about somebody who was there on New Year's Eve in 1959 when Batista came in.
What do you think
but
about...
I think that it is probably time. I think politically it's difficult given the importance of the state of Florida as we've seen in past elections. I think one of the things that Obama said about Cuba that I found very interesting is the two strong points of that country are its health system and its literacy rate. And Obama made a speech which I thought was moving, in which he mentioned the Cuban doctors and teachers who are goodwill ambassadors among some of the poor and some of the third world countries. And then he said the United States ought to take that as an example and we should be doing more of that.
I just want to say, literacy was higher under Batista, A, and B.
I thought literacy was
I will stand by on that point. Literacy was higher under Batista than it is today, although it's very high today. It's almost as high as Iowa. But number two is the healthcare system. When we were down there with Governor Ryan, we visited several hospitals. I personally went out and visited clinics in Havana with people from the Illinois Department of Public Health. They said absolutely categorically, if any one of these places was operating in Illinois, we'd have to shut it down.
We're going to take calls. Richard in Austin, Texas on KLBJ. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes. Thanks very much for your program. I listen most weeks.
Thanks very much.
And unfortunately, I'm throwing back to last hour's discussion.
That's okay.
And you hear often on this program and others the argument made that the policy the Bush administration set after 9/11 of enhanced interrogation or torture, et cetera, has made us safe since then. And I'd like to point out that up until 9/11, we had not been attacked on our homeland for, 50 or 60 years? And I really think that
that's not true. I mean, the 1993 bombing of the World Trade Center took place in 1993 on President Clinton's watch. I mean, so that was an attack on
I guess what I wanted to get at was I think that very possibly what motivated the bombers was the plan that the neoconservatives had under Cheney and his group to completely control the world, including the Middle East and Middle Eastern oil, and keep the U.S. dominant forever.
Okay, well,
just became frustrated.
If you can put, let's just say, the attack of 9/11 started, the planning of that attack started while President Clinton was still president.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm not blaming President Clinton, nor in any respect do I say because of advanced interrogation. And only because of advanced interrogation, did we remain safe after 9/11. I think a whole bunch of things went into the unfortunate attack of 9/11, and a whole bunch of things have intervened between us and any other attack.
No, but I think what can be stated, and it is not exclusively to President Carter or President Clinton, rather, because there was timid response.
Right.
To the earlier attacks, not only at the World Trade Center, but again the USS Cole, and which was late in his administration, but I want to take it back to the attack on the Marine barracks under Ronald Reagan.
Sure.
I mean, the fact is, we had president after president that did not respond in any significant way to these acts of terror.
Cobar
so
Towers.
So they encourage people to act.
Right.
And granted, the only president that decided that he was going to do something about it in a significant way was George Bush when he drew the line in the sand. Back shortly from Chicago, 1-800-723-8289. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Let's go to Sylvia listening to us in Winnebago, Illinois, on WLS Radio. Go ahead, Sylvia.
Well, if you want to talk about who's been to Cuba and who hasn't, let's talk about George Ryan, who's now in prison here, our former governor.
Right.
He went to Cuba and sucked up the Castro.
I accompanied him. I was working for WMAQ Radio at the time. That's the time I went.
Yeah, and he was very impressed with Castro, too. Whereas Castro, you know, he has nothing down there but an island prison.
Nobody ever remembers this. Just a little inside baseball. In those days, there were different positions about the embargo.
Yeah.
And you had kind of there was kind of the Republican position, then there was a Democrat position enunciated by Chris Dodd. And there were certain specifics about these and, you know, where were the breakpoints. And I interviewed Ryan when we were down there.
Yeah.
He was to the left of Chris Dodd. And I'm not sure, after I interviewed him, I wasn't really sure that anyone had ever briefed him on what he was talking about. I don't know that I said that on the radio 10 years
ago. Well, I think
a
lot of people just thought that he was looking to maybe hop there if he was ever indicted.
That's what I figured,
because they didn't have an extradition.
Exactly.
And,
in 1990.
No, he was not. No, he was not facing indictment.
Did he have his wife with him? I mean, was
yes.
it a vacation?
Oh, yes. Oh, they brought Speaker Madigan and his
group.
Wife. Yeah, we had this national.
Here's my question to you, Sylvia. It's 47 years. I mean, has the embargo worked?
Oh, yes.
Has the embargo really worked? And after 47 years, again, Castro's on his way out. I mean, what's wrong with talking to them?
What's right about talking to them? We don't owe them anything. And for Barack Obama to stand there and say, oh, we're a nation of laws, well, he doesn't want to enforce that on illegal aliens. We've got the laws. But he just says, oh, no, we've got to change the laws to suck up to the illegal aliens now.
Well, I think your point about, you know, we are a nation of laws is a good point. I think that's a line that he will repeat over and over again.
Fidel is on his way out. Raul is following him. Is there much of a difference?
No, not much of a difference.
No one should underestimate the tyranny and the despotism down there.
Let's
go to
Paul
of the average person.
In Dayton, Ohio. Go ahead. You're on the air, Paul.
Hey, guys. How you doing? I listen to your show a lot.
Thank you.
For your, just two things, really. America has always been in a leadership role. We need to continue to do that. And I don't have a problem with having discussions with folks, but we can't change the rules in the middle of the game. I think the embargoes have worked. It takes two to tango, and Castro didn't want to tango. So, hey, he made his own history. So the only thing I can talk about that is just press on and continue to try and lead.
There are two reasons why the embargo was maintained. One of them is an anti-communist thinking, the way Reagan was pushing so strongly. Anybody that's a communist, they're bad, unless they're China and we do business with them, unless they're the Soviet Union we do business with them. But the perception that you're talking about, that the public has, is that they have to have somebody to hate. And so communism in Cuba was somebody
and
to
this,
hate.
And this and started, the, let's put it in context. This is a policy that started during the Kennedy administration.
It has been perpetuated uninterrupted when
by
the
Republicans
Communist
and
Party
Democrats.
Took over Cuba ever since then. And it didn't work to.
And where we were trying to take over Cuba.
Of course.
And where we were trying to assassinate Fidel Castro.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean,
Destabilize their government.
Yeah.
We were doing all of the
People
things.
Don't remember that
we were doing all of the things that were probably in this book that Hugo Chavez gave
I'm
to the
sure
president.
I'm sure we were, and the book tells it, I'm certain.
That's right.
The second thing that we seem to not want to focus on enough, or the public in general, is the lobby and that's causing our decision making. The lobbyists not only in Florida, but in New Jersey. You remember Senator Bob Torricelli?
Right.
He got lots of money from the Cuban lobby.
That's right.
He had a dedicated feeling about the communist country.
But Jim, this is a country 90 miles off of our shores.
Yes.
That has been denying human rights, that has been holding political prisoners, that has been denying elections. I mean, the people down there live in abject poverty. They don't have any kind of world-class health care system. The world-class health care system is for fly-in visits from other tyrants and despots. like in Angola. And
so why should we care?
Patrice Lumumba.
Why should we care? Why should this have any priority at all for the administration?
Well, I think the Cuban people are as deserving of respect by their own government as any other people anywhere.
Are the people in Africa deserving? Are the people
absolutely?
In Asia deserving?
I mean,
why don't we boycott them?
Well, we have different ways of dealing with different situations. I want to say the reason we are the irony of this particular week historically is that the only reason Fidel Castro and his regime, now in the person of Raul, his younger brother, are still in power is because of Hugo Chavez and the 1990s oil prices per barrel. Because if the oil price per barrel had not gone to where it had, and if Hugo Chavez had not taken over in Venezuela as he did, there would not have been a replacement for the Soviets, which were putting down there about $7 to $9 million a day.
Yeah.
Okay, not because Cuba was a model of democracy for the League of Women Voters in Oak Park.
Let's go to Joel in Des Plaines, Illinois. You're on the air, coast to coast.
Thank you, Bruce. There was one error you made. You said that Obama's been doing what he promised to do in his campaign. He promised to veto earmarks, and yet in this most recent budget bill, he approved it.
That is correct.
Second of all, Jim Walz, you said that the people who engaged in torture, the ones who were actually doing it, have a defense that they were following orders, and I thought that defense went out the window with the Nuremberg trials. It seems to me that perhaps the lawyers who wrote the opinions are more culpable, but nonetheless, those who were actually pushing these people around are culpable on the basis that the orders that they were following were illegal.
Let me tell you that I don't agree with the fact that these people were doing this should not be reprimanded or something, but the point I'm making is Nuremberg was an international court. It was not a domestic court, so that's a vast difference from...
But the principle is the same. If you engage in torture or illegal killing of people, that's wrong, whether it's a domestic court, the Federal District Court in New York, or whether it's
But you're stating a legal conclusion that was not reached. I mean, there isn't a legal conclusion that what they did was torture. There's a political conclusion. There's a big difference between a legal and a political conclusion.
Well, if it went to a court, could determine whether it was an illegal act, though.
But clearly that was torture. Now, I mean, what they were doing was wrong. And
right.
Certainly the lawyers who wrote the opinions to justify it are certainly more culpable, and right. I hope that they get chased out. But I don't think that the fact that they were those who were on the spot engaging in these, I think...
Joel, I want to come back to an earlier question, and it was a question that we asked several weeks ago on the program then. I'm hearing you state, and I want to make sure that I'm hearing you correctly, you believe that by airing dirty laundry and by sharing it with the world and with the media of the world, that there is good that can come out of that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
It's the right thing to do. It's just right. Now, I don't know how the chips are going to fall. It may be that it works against us in the future. But if it's wrong, it's wrong, and it's wrong. I mean, it's got to be put out there so that hopefully it never happens again. But the way to make sure or help to make sure it doesn't happen again in our country is to say to the people involved, hey, you're not supposed to be doing this, consequences.
So to follow you through, you believe that the people who were involved in this should be prosecuted if they broke the law, and you do believe there should be some sort of a congressional hearing or some type of an independent investigation so all the dirty laundry is out there, and that will make the country more respected and the leaders that speak for this admired on the world stage.
You know, whether we're admired or not, it's the principle that you can't do this to people. You just simply can't do this to people. It's wrong, and it may be that it works ultimately to our disadvantage, but you've got to draw a line and say, can't do this.
Is it possible, sir, is it possible that although it is dastardly, it is immoral, but is it possible that the conduct of the interrogators, if the conduct of an interrogator got a perpetrator to acknowledge a plot that would have resulted in, let's say, the detonation of a nuclear device somewhere in the United States.
In Boston, in downtown
Boston. In Boston, in Chicago.
Chicago.
If that action resulted in saving of tens of thousands of lives, would it have been worth the violation of their civil liberties, civil rights, torture, moral compass? Would it be worth it?
Of course, but the problem is you never know that in advance.
That's right. You don't know that. You don't know it. I don't know it. Jim Wall doesn't know it.
Barack Obama doesn't know it. I can tell you that.
You have got to put your confidence in people who are there at the moment to make a blind decision as to how far they can go to get the information.
When the blinding flash of the nuclear explosion,
Bruce,
you have said over and over again it doesn't work. State your proof or admit your lie. State your proof or admit your lie.
I'm only quoting numerous experts.
Who's an expert?
Immediately
there is there is no expert. Unless they were in the room and they know what the person was saying, you don't know. It isn't tit for tat.
It became Saddam
you
Hussein.
Say it, it's like a fiat. Oh,
Saddam Hussein
make any
said
sense.
He had WMDs.
It's like people saying the war that were more at risk.
But Jim,
you remember Saddam Hussein said they had.
Jim, you're still on WMD, but do you know how much...
Back shortly from Chicago. You got me ticked off. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Jim Wall is our Democrat this evening. He is one of the contributing editors of Christian Century Magazine, where he was the editor for many, many years. He hails from Monroe, Georgia. Once upon a time was a sports writer and a longtime political operative, having been to many of the Democratic conventions, a whip at many of them. And one of his close friends is Jimmy Carter, former president of the United States, who he once had as a guest on a show. That's how we met, 1976.
Yes, we did.
Jimmy Carter. We had a little dust up, but we became good friends after that.
We worked it out.
We did work it out.
Yep.
And also joining us this evening is Chris Roebling. Once upon a time, he was the executive director of the Cook County Republican Party. He is now a principal in the Jane Thompson and Associates, which is a consulting and public relations firm, and they help people who need help, and I guess that's a good way of putting it.
We tried.
And once upon a time, I know you can't tell about it because you'd have to kill me, but you were in the CIA or at one point.
Oh. It's true. It is true.
So you could kill me with one hand.
OSS or
no.
CIA?
How old do you think I am?
Carol Felsenthal also joins you. She is one of the country's leading writers, and she's written a new book called Clinton in Exile. It is not necessarily a new book. In fact, the book is somewhat old because it's about to be a paperback.
And with this an updated chapter.
This deals with the activities, primarily the fiscal activities, of Bill Clinton after he left the office. When I say the fiscal activities, I mean he did a lot of fundraising for his...
Oh, you mean FISCA. Yeah. Okay. I thought you meant the physical activities. And
there are many of those.
There have been both. But mainly he's made a lot of money.
And also in your investigation, obviously, you've delved a lot into Hillary Clinton as well. And Hillary Clinton, again, you know, everybody's talking about the first 100 days. They're coming up in about actually next week. But let's talk about the first, not 100 days, of Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. One of her highest sort of visible roles was her recent trip to Mexico. And I know that's caught your attention, Carol.
It caught my attention because she pretty much followed the line that many of the problems of violence and death and drug dealing in Mexico is the fault of the United States. And she said that pretty clearly. She said, we have to clean up our act. We have an insatiable appetite in the United States for all kinds of illegal drugs, and that is having repercussions in Mexico. And it interested me because she is obviously speaking as an official of our government. I think she clears what she does with the Obama administration pretty closely. As somebody said, I think off the leash, Hillary is on, off the air rather, that Hillary is on a short leash. And
Did you applaud her when she said that?
Did I applaud her?
Did you applaud what she had to say?
I thought she was speaking the truth.
Right. And, she was speaking the truth. She was on foreign soil. She was acknowledging what everybody knows. Mm-hmm. Everybody also knows that the United States and its actions in Latin America have not all been pure of heart or pristine. What is so wrong with a politician, whether it's the president of the United States?
I don't think she's been criticized particularly.
No, she hasn't. But I'm drawing it together with our earlier discussion. I mean, what's wrong with a grown-up country acknowledging that in the history of the grown-up, we've done some things wrong?
Well, you know, one of the callers used the term leadership role when talking about the United States. And I think if you wanted to look at what Barack Obama has done over the last several days in this latest trip is he said that the United States is, he didn't say it's not a superpower, but he said it's a country among countries and that we are one of the pack. We're not necessarily the leader of the pack. That's part of what he was saying, and it kind of a little bit fell under the radar screen. It's an extremely unusual statement for an American president to make.
This is not the approach that was taken by John F. Kennedy, not the approach taken by Lyndon Johnson, not the approach taken by Jimmy Carter or even Bill Clinton. All of them recognize that in the hemisphere, we have always had a very special position. The only, you know, we are, you know, just by leaps and bounds, the largest economy, and everybody understands that. Now, there's a lot of history. I think there's a difference, Bruce, in the question you pose between the statement of a head of state like Barack Obama now and the statement of essentially a government minister, which is what Hillary is right now. Government ministers say a lot of the truth when they have to solve problems internationally. There's a lot of that goes on. I don't think there's anything too unusual of Hillary saying what she said in Mexico. That's different from President Obama speaking for the entire country, okay? And I think what you get with Obama and the whole country is an ability to strengthen adversaries. Now, even at that,
but part of this is his personal style. He's basically saying is, I'm not coming in here that I have all the answers. We're not going to lecture you. You know, we may confess that we've done some wrong thing. Maybe we've got some warts. You know, I'm gonna walk across the room and shake your hand. I know I'm not supposed to do that. I'll take a book from you. You know, this is not big deal stuff. You know, it may be politics 101 in the State Department book as to how leaders of the free world are supposed to act. But you know what? I've been elected president of the United States. I don't think the previous MO by the presidents has worked. And you know what? I'm the boss now. And basically, what you're saying is he wants to be one of the guys. He doesn't want to come across as a know-it-all.
Generally speaking,
people who act like that are liked.
But it is his decision to make. The question is not, is it his decision to make? The question is, will there be results? But the results will tell the tale.
But he has been highly political, and you saw that when he refused to endorse an assault weapon ban. Mm-hmm. And you saw it also in the conversations about NAFTA. Remember during the campaign that Barack Obama was all for putting some limits and rewriting some of the clauses in NAFTA. You don't hear him talking about that.
He's also political when he says, you know, let's let bygones be bygones and we're not going to have retribution. Because there are many people in the country, including Jim Wall, I'm assuming, Jim, that you would like to see congressional investigations. You'd like to see some people go to jail for these past indiscretions. And there certainly is, if it isn't you, there's probably a healthy slice of America's left that would like to see retribution and would like to see Dick Cheney and George Bush in prison somewhere.
No, I wouldn't go that far. But I do want to commend you for your point about the rationale behind Obama's attitude in Latin America. It makes all the sense in the world. You are absolutely right.
Well,
he's also a man.
Well, I think we should find out what the results are. If Hugo Chavez continues to attempt to destabilize Colombia, which is a true ally of ours and a government that does everything it possibly can to respect the rights of its citizens and to grow its economy and to participate in a constructive way in international trade and relations, if he continues to destabilize Colombia, then it's not a good result.
These countries all would like to have better economic dialogue and relationship with the United States because they are suffering with their own economies, Venezuela and Bolivia and Mexico. So I think the practicality of it is that destabilization would not be of much benefit to Chavez. That's why I think
Robert,
the results are positive.
In Franklin Park, Illinois, on WLS and Coast to Coast. Are you there? Can you speak up?
Yes, hello?
Yes.
Yeah, this is Bob Schwartz from Franklin Park.
Yes, Bob.
Is this Bruce?
Yes, it is. You're on Coast to Coast.
Okay,
go
hello,
ahead.
Bruce. I want to talk to you about with the Cuban thing going on with Obama. And I'm just wondering, first of all, I think that, the embargo has been too long because I don't think that there's any harm that Cuba can do to us. And the thing is that I'm wondering why don't we have an embargo with Russia or with China, especially whenever China, they had those Red Square massacres of protesting students and stuff like that. I'm just wondering, why don't we have an embargo against these other countries?
We need them for our economy, for
yeah.
one thing.
Yeah, we need
it.
I think this is, and again, I'm not on foreign soil. I'm just on the radio. But I think there certainly is a healthy strain of hypocrisy in our foreign policy and in much of our conduct.
Yeah.
Be it Republican,
really
Democrat, liberal, or conservative. I mean, that's a reality.
Uh-huh.
Why do we, it's like, why do we pick on smaller countries than bigger countries?
Right, because, Cuba can't do anything for us. What can they do against us to harm us? I think that actually if we lift the embargo, maybe, we could help them because those people, they are suffering over there. The people, they live in poverty, and they haven't done anything wrong. So I don't understand why we have an embargo on them when we should be having an embargo because now Russia, they're already sending convoys across the Bering Straits with planes guarding, across from Alaska.
Let's let Chris Roebling respond.
Well, I think we
is it a double standard?
Yeah, I know.
I think there is. Bob, hold on. I think there has been a double standard, and Cuba is smaller and it is closer to the United States, and it was involved as a client of the Soviet Union in basing nuclear weapons that were directed at the United States. That President Kennedy and his leadership, thank goodness, derailed. But it is not nearly as significant in the global economy as Russia was or as China is, as Russia still is. But the fact that we have an embargo against Cuba is an expression, as Jim Wall said, of a domestic political constituency that wanted not to reward Fidel Castro and his regime for their expropriation of that country. Now, that is a reality, and given what they've done to their own people— We've been trying to get rid of them, and that's a good thing.
Let's see what happens. I would love to be on a fly on the wall when President Obama sits down with Ted Kennedy. I wonder what Ted Kennedy says about dropping the embargo, the one that was created by his brothers back shortly from Chicago. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Let's go to Morristown, Tennessee. Gary is listening to us on WNOX, one of the great blowtorch stations of the South. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, bro. I'll agree with everything you said that we do have a double standard with Cuba, but let's look at it in this context. If a man is married and he's got a wife and he goes outside of the marriage and he ends up with a mistress, he may end up with more than one mistress. Well, at that point in time, he can break his ties from that mistress and there's nothing left behind with China and some of the other nations that we have done that with. We now got a kid. You have a child with that woman, and now you're tied to her forever. There's no need in us going to Cuba and now condoning again the same thing that we condemn in these other countries and put ourselves in a relationship that we can't break the ties easily.
The only reason to engage Cuba in this new way, which is not repealing the embargo, the only reason is to hasten the end of the oppressive communist Castro, Raul and Fidel regime. That is the only reason, so that Cubans can live in freedom.
But also, when you're talking about American values, you know, there's the values of human rights, and then there's the values of the almighty dollar. And our foreign policy is driven by the moral values of the almighty dollar far more than it is about what really happens to people, whether or not they can vote and whether they've got printing presses.
That's what
we talk about.
But not in the case
of
Cuba.
But what drives the foreign policy is cash.
The Cubans, it's said, would rather see the embargo remain in place because they use the embargo to cast the United States as the villain.
The government does.
The government does, right. But that the embargo is not, it's not necessarily in their interest to lift it. But when you look at what happened in Cuba over the last several days, earlier before Obama arrived, there was a delegation of African American congressmen who went, and I found that very interesting because they were very full of admiration for Fidel, not to mention Raul,
and were greeted and
hosted in his house, but there was no great outcry, and I just feel like you can kind of sense the sands are shifting.
Remember
Cuba
that Cuba I think this has is where a high number of Afro-American citizens.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's another reason why Obama is so effective in dealing with Cuba, is the people of color responding to him. We haven't said that, but it's important. Same thing is true of the Native Native Venezuelans and the Native Bolivians and the Native Colombians. This is a man of race.
African American congressmen didn't bring up anything negative.
They wouldn't.
They had a junket to Cuba,
right?
Because they had already cured up all the problems of Detroit. So why don't you check out Havana? Let's go to Wheeling,
Central LA.
Let's go to Chris in Wheeling, Illinois, on WLS.
Yes, Bruce. I heard you talking earlier about torture and enhanced interrogation techniques.
Yes.
And let me put a scenario to you and see how far you're willing to go with this.
Okay.
Would you be willing to put the children of a terrorist, for example, in a dry swimming pool and then put them in one by one and maybe have dogs rip them apart while the terrorist looks on?
No.
Okay, why not?
That, to me, has gone a little bit too far.
What about attaching electrodes to a man's testicles?
No, that wouldn't bother me. I mean, it would bother me, but
you would
no.
be willing to do that?
If you get the that would be something you want to get the answer.
I mean, I just wonder.
It probably wouldn't take you long to get an answer to that question.
Yeah, you're talking about a slippery slope.
And let me ask you another question, though, Bruce. Why is it that Mossad, which I think has probably the best security and intelligence system out there, does not use terrorists, but does not use, rather, you know, torture on their in their interrogation?
How do we know that?
We don't know that.
Well, that's what they say.
Pardon?
That's what they say. And from what
Israel also doesn't acknowledge having nuclear weapons.
No, I think Israel has not been without its faults regarding torture.
But I also believe that everything I've read in the popular press. Now, I admittedly, I'm not an expert.
Don't do that.
On the subject.
That's a big mistake.
Okay.
Well,
they say that, you know, torture does not really work. If it did work that effectively, why is it American who have been tortured have not really gone across and, delivered information to the enemy when they've been captured?
Part of the misconception about, quote, torture in this conversation we've been having for the last 4 years or 5 years when we're post Abu Ghraib is that it is a garden variety tactic of the United – it has been a garden variety tactic of the United States government. And if you actually dig into the story, you find out that the enhanced interrogation – techniques have been used rather sparingly on a limited number of subjects and, with a couple of exceptions, on limited occasions. So we're not talking about something that is just sort of, oh, we've found somebody on the field of battle. Let's haul him off to a tent and start torturing. That's not the way this works.
That the United States Army has set forth a rule of laws, and they've actually prosecuted and executed German and Japanese officials for engaging in activities that we are doing right now. We should follow the United States military's rules of conduct.
Chris, we have our rules.
And if they we would all,
in an ideal world, we would all like to abide by them.
I'm sorry, but if we can execute Japanese and Nazi people for engaging in activities that are authorized by American officials, then they should face the same penalty.
I don't know. I personally don't concede that point. I don't know what you're talking about. I don't think that is true.
People, bottom line, people want to be safe. They want to be secure. And many people, not saying all people, but a large number of people, all they want to be is safe. They don't want any questions asked. They just want it done. They want to be protected. That's all they care about. And that's why, from a political standpoint, I don't think there's a lot of political hay to be made by pushing this down the road. We're out of time. We'll talk more about it next week. Jim Wall, Carol Felsenthal, Chris Roebling have all been here. Our thanks to Ben Stewart and Tom Veracruz for their assistance in the production of this program. Until next week at the same time, this is Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.